Wait for it.
There's no need to wait, geeks. We are back. This is the Active Geek Podcast with your hosts, Jim and Chuck. And Chuck, we're back with another wonderful episode, another Wednesday, another Active Geek episode. And we've got a trailer that we're going to talk about. We've got a first look at a Netflix series that I know we're both pumped about. I have a little bit of a rumor that I want to share with you. We got some comic picks of the week, and then we're going to talk Jupiter's Legacy, because that came out. If you haven't seen it, this episode is going to be heavily filled with spoilers. So tune out towards like the halfway point of this episode. If this is 35 minutes, tune out at 17 and a half minutes. But let's kind of go into the trailer park. And I'm going to say right now, first and foremost, as we begin this episode, that I am lifting the trailer curse for the Active Geek Podcast. Three times, almost back to back to back, we've got trailers before we record it. So I'm gonna lift the curse. I'm sure by Thursday there will be another episode, another trailer. But we can talk about that next week. Let's go to the trailer park. We're gonna open the trailer door. We're gonna walk into our trailer, and we're gonna go straight to the toy box because we're gonna play with G.I. Joes today. Snake Eyes, G.I. Joe Origin, starring Henry Golding, is giving us a trailer. We got a first look pretty quickly on Friday of Henry Golding holding the helmet. In the Snake Eyes suit, we see the Baroness. We see Samara Weaving as Scarlet. We see, don't think we see Storm Shadow, but we see a lot. What do you think about this trailer? Because I have some thoughts about it, but I'm curious to see where you're at with this.
One, I don't think they showed a whole lot. I mean, it was like, what, 25 seconds, 30 seconds? They didn't show a whole lot, but from what I saw, I like it. Like, it's kind of what I expected. I didn't expect anything over the top. Like, it's a little more grounded than the Steven Summers G.I. Joe movie that we saw back in the early 2000s.
Where the Rock's lifting Humvees?
Well, no, that was Retaliation.
They're working on a sequel to that.
I didn't hate that one. The Steven Summers one was pretty bad because, anyway, I liked it. It was a lot different than the original stuff, movies. A lot of action, which I expect out of a Snake Eyes movie. And I really like Henry Golding. So I'm actually excited for this.
Yeah, I thought the trailer was good. Well, you wouldn't know it's a Snake Eyes movie until the very end when they show you the title. They're like, oh, this is a Snake Eyes
movie. They do show the helmet. He's not wearing it.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. That's my problem with this entire trailer. I think the action looks great. The tone looks great. But when I think of Snake Eyes, I almost said it again. When I think of Snake Eyes, he's a helmet character, 100%. He's faceless, essentially. And I think what's happening, and I don't think that this is, you know, the director Robert Schwetke's fault. I think this is more of a studio fault. They are cashing in on that they have a handsome lead. And they're like, we're going to show that moneymaker the entire movie. Because when you think of Snake Eyes, he wears the helmet the entire time.
Well, yeah, in the first two movies, Ray Park, he didn't talk. Nothing.
Well, he doesn't talk in any of his movies, let's be honest. He's kind of typecasted. But, like, go back to the toys even and the comics. Like, you didn't see his face.
No.
You know what I mean? He was just a generic toy who they needed somebody else and they painted him black and that was it. And it turned into one of the most popular ones. I'm willing to put that aside if Henry Golding wears this mask in most of the movie and we just got the parts of, like, and obviously it's a story that's going to be origin building and we're seeing, you know, the birth of the character, so he has to join the crew, he's got to be trained. I get that. It's very Batman Begins, right, where he's training with the League of Shadows. I want to see that next step, that progression where he's constantly fighting as Snake Eyes with the mask on motorcycles, on cars, on tanks, on boats, on planes, all that. I don't want to see handsome Henry Golding flaunting his little mustache around without his helmet on. The helmet's important to me.
I think if anything, I think it's only going to be, I would say, at most, a third of the movie.
Well, then do you do the character justice then? I don't think so.
No.
People are cosplaying Snake Eyes with the helmet. They're not running around with the suit on and not the helmet. It's like Red Hood just wearing a biker jacket.
I mean, and not the helmet. I get what you're saying, but if you're going to do a whole movie, like, I get where the studio's at, too. You know what I mean? Like, can a character like that excel with not being shown his face for an entire movie. I don't think so.
Well, don't make the movie then. That's like Batman without the cape and the cowl. You know, if Batman was just Batman and didn't have the Bruce Wayne story and the Bruce Wayne character, would you make a Batman movie?
No.
So why not make, why would you make this movie? This is, again, a generic character that rose to power. It's Boba Fett all over again. Would you make a Boba Fett movie? And we saw it with The Mandalorian. The Mandalorian didn't wear his helmet, or he wore his helmet until the very last episode. In the whole first season, and he took his helmet off in one episode in the second season, and it worked. So, you know, it just has to be the studio saying, we trust this character. I don't think they trust the character. I think they want to bank on Henry Golding's handsome face.
100%, that's what they're going for.
So, I'm going to see it. I'm a little frustrated. But again, it's a trailer. It's like Venom versus Carnage, where I'm like, yeah, I didn't love it. I didn't hate it. I'm still going to see the movie because, again, it's for the brand. Let's go into the Netflix world because Kevin Smith is doing a Masters of the Universe anime series. Mm-hmm. Stacked cast. It's Masters of the Universe Revelation. And it's got Christopher Wood in it, Kevin Conroy, Liam Cunningham, Diedrich Bader, Mark Hamill, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Susan Eisenberg, Lena Headey, Phil LaMarr, Justin Long, Jay Muse. And it keeps going. Alan Oppenheimer, can't forget about him. We got a first look, no trailer. We got the stills, and you sent the stills to me. They're beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. What'd you think?
I loved it, and I said this to you in text. Like, they had to change it, update it a little bit. You know what I mean? It's been almost 40 years since the original character came out in cartoons. But I think they did it justice. They changed it without changing it too much.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely a subtle change.
Yeah, they modernized it. It was very bright, very vibrant.
The whole universe is kind of bright and vibrant. My man runs around with a pink onesie on.
I know that, but, like, just the stills itself just looked, I don't know, to me they just looked, they popped.
Well, when you put, I hear what you're saying. When you put them up against the 1980s stuff, they're not going to pop. It's just based on quality of the picture, but they do pop.
My favorite still is Beastman.
Yeah, he looks great. Beastman and Mossman look amazing.
I want to see a trailer. And we also, he said it's going to be a two-parter. So we're getting the first five episodes in July.
Yeah, July 23rd. It looks good. You know, a while ago we heard the Chris Wood tease of him doing I Have the Power by the Power of Grayskull. I think it looks great. This is 100% on one of these things I'm going to watch. I love every kind of Netflix anime adaption that they put out there. I finished Castlevania and it's brilliant. That series was amazing. If anybody hasn't watched it they're truly missing out. But this is the He-Man I wanted. This is the He-Man that I hope we get. And I'd like this to go like four seasons like Castlevania, because it's a proven IP just like Castlevania. So we'll see what happens. I want to hit you with a rumor before we go into my comics pick of the week. So we've talked about this character in a lot of our Star Wars episodes, and that character is Mara Jade.
Okay.
Have you seen the latest Mara Jade rumors?
No, I have not.
Okay, so great. This is great podcast right here. I want to know your reaction right off the bat. The rumor is that Disney and Lucasfilms are in heavy, and they mean like heavy, no foreplay. Like, they're right into it. Discussions with one Brie Larson to play Mara Jade.
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
All right, so tell me why.
Brie Larson is a good actress.
I mean, Academy Award winning actress.
Yeah, no, she's a good actress.
Some would say great.
I just don't see her as Mara Jade at all.
I am, in regards to this, let's start with the rumor. In regards to the rumor, I'm glad that Mara Jade's being discussed. Super excited with that. Love it. Character that you and I have been petitioning for. We even talked about in our State of Star Wars, right? As far as the casting, I get why she's being courted. She's a Star Wars fan, number one. She's tried out for all the new trilogies, didn't make the cut. She's Captain Marvel. A lot of people don't like that character, and a lot of people seemingly don't like her, which is weird because, like, I haven't heard anything super bad about her. I haven't heard that she's, like, a terrible person. But maybe they think that she's a wooden actress, if you will. Some people, I don't know. I liked her in Scott Pilgrim versus World, obviously Room, she was fantastic. And Captain Marvel, she was great. Well, she was okay.
She was good in King Kong.
Yeah, she was good in King Kong too. But I don't know about this. I think there's other people that I'd like to see as Mara Jade, and if I had a little more time, I would say those names, but I literally just read this rumor before you called, or I called you. So I'm very curious to see where we go with that. If it happens, great. If it doesn't, and we get another actress in there, I'll be fine with it. But the fact that Mara Jade's coming is exciting for me.
Yeah, I like the idea. Like, if she got cast, I wouldn't hate it. You know, there's far more worse choices out there. But I just don't see her as Mara Jade.
Well, we'll have to see, man. We'll keep an eye on that one. And we will report back on that, obviously, when it happens. But let's go to my comic pick of the week, which is four of them. And by four, I mean four. But there's no images on this one. There's no image new comics this week. So let's start with, we'll go DC. I got one DC and three Marvels. The first one is Wonder Girl number one, written and drawn by Joelle Jones. And it's the story of Yara Fleur, which starts here. Raised in the far-off land of Boise, Idaho, Yara Fleur has always felt something was missing from her life, and now she is headed to Brazil to find it. Little does she know, her arrival will set off a series of events that will change the world of Wonder Woman forever. Her return has been prophesied, and with that prophecy comes an undivided attention of benevolent gods from pantheons beyond. Danger lurks around every corner, but is the young hero ready for her journey? Find out in the debut issue you absolutely cannot miss. Spinning out of the best-selling Future State Wonder Woman, acclaimed writer/artist Joelle Jones makes a triumphant return to the character to officially introduce her into the DC Universe. You think you know Wonder Girl, but you have never seen her like this. That last line is the biggest lie in the DC Universe. We don't know Wonder Girl. She had two books.
Yeah.
And a very loose origin, and not even an origin. They just picked up in Brazil. So I know you read Future State. You're kind of on the fence with Wonder Girl. Is this a pickup for you?
I don't know. It might be one of the ones where, like, I pick it up. And you not not subscribed to it yet.
Okay. Let's go with the next one. We're going to enter the Marvel-verse. Fantastic Four, Life Story, the 60s. Written by Mark Russell with art from Sean Isaacs. In the tradition of Spider-Man Life Story and in celebration of Fantastic Four's 60th anniversary comes the series setting the lives of the Fabulous Foursome in real time across the years. Amid the background of the Cold War and the space race, a terrible accident gives the Fantastic Four great powers, a terrible secret, and entangles them in the history of their planet. Art looks great on this one. That's all I'm going to say. There's a preview on Previews World with no dialogue, but the art looks phenomenal. Cop or drop?
Cop.
Okay. Next one is Shang-Chi, written by Jean Luen Yang and DK Ruan. Shang-Chi versus the Marvel Universe. Shang-Chi and his family are back, and this time they're colliding head-to-head with the Marvel Universe's biggest heroes. Shang-Chi has finally taken his place as the leader of the Five Weapons Society, but using an evil secret organization as a force for good won't be easy. And it's about to get a lot harder when Shang-Chi's fellow superheroes like the Amazing Spider-Man start to see him as the bad guy. Jean Luen Yang and DK Ruan return to bring you the next chapter of this Marvel legend. He's got a movie coming out. This is his second story in 2020, 2021. Cop or drop?
Cop, because I really don't know much about Shang-Chi. So before the movie, it would be nice to get it and kind of brush up on the character.
Yeah, I love anything that's versed the Marvel Universe. Punisher, Daredevil, not Daredevil, Deadpool. I love all that stuff. The final one is Immortal Hulk, Time of Monsters, written by Al Ewing and Moore, and art by Moore. Al Ewing and Alex Pakendell introduced the original Hulk. 10,000 years ago, something green and glowing comes to poison the ancient ground of the Fertile Crescent and the hearts of its people. One boy is left to bear the consequences and, for the first time, to open the green door. Plus, Bruce Banner faces a challenge unlike any he's seen before as writer David Vaughn makes his Marvel debut. I don't think I've ever recommended a Hulk book. But the art, again, looks great on this. Are you going to pick up the Immortal Hulk?
Probably not.
Yeah, I read the Immortal Hulk King in Black tie-in, and it was just pictures. It was the quickest. It was just the quickest read I've ever had. I felt like I was eight again. The art was great. The story was great. But I don't know what was happening because obviously the Hulk doesn't speak. So, you know, you don't understand. Like, I prefer to read comic books with the words. So maybe I missed it. Maybe there's a secret, you know, pulled it under black light and there's art under there or there's letters under there, but I missed it. Let's go to the meat and the potatoes of said episode today, Chuck, and that's Jupiter's Legacy. So again, listeners, if you haven't watched Jupiter's Legacy Volume 1, all 8 episodes on Netflix, tune out because there's spoilers and we're going to spoil the whole show because that's what we do here. Let's kind of break it down by category. Let's talk about the story first. It's a new story to you, written by Mark Millar. Yeah. It came out 18 years ago. You've never read the comics. This is your first taste of Jupiter's Legacy.
Yeah.
What did you think of the story alone?
The story itself I thought was good. I liked that it was an origin story that spanned it, 90 years? I thought that was neat. And I really liked the idea of their code. Like, and then I liked how there was friction between it. So the whole thing is the utopian is we cannot kill. We cannot kill. And that really comes into question in the first episode. They kind of took Batman's non-killing code and then kind of pumped it with steroids. I really liked that. And then the conflict of, well, if you're killing a bad person, is that good? You know what I mean? Like, is killing, yes, killing's bad, but is killing to protect people and your own life, is that acceptable?
Yeah, it's like kill one to save a thousand, right?
Yeah, and Utopian's like, no. Like, even if you die, even if your friends die, you cannot kill them.
Yeah, even if your family dies.
Yeah.
Because that's what we see Paragon has to, you know, kind of jockey with during the first episode with the fight against Black Star, where his mother and his father are about to die.
Yeah.
And he just does some crazy Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, uppercut, Hadouken uppercut, and just implodes this beast head who, like, I'm like, first of all, Black Star is dope. I wanted to see more of him. And then he died. I was like, oh, wait, this is where we're at.
Yeah.
I really liked that. I thought that was a pretty good part.
So I really liked the theme of the series itself.
Yeah, I mean, the story kind of stayed close to the first chapter of comics while intermingling the second chapter of comics. They added wrinkles into the story, which I thought were good. I thought that the wrinkles they added were great. I think that they did a lot of character building for Sheldon and his family. Lady Liberty, his brother, Paragon, Chloe, they got a lot of that. And I understand that that is the legacy that we're talking about. But they didn't really build a lot of the other characters minus Sky Fox. And I thought that that was kind of weird because, you know, there's Hutch and then there's Hutch's crew with, you know, Jack Frost. And then there's the rest of the Union of Justice and then like the Teen Titan group, Nick of Time, all these characters. They really didn't build on them. And some of those characters, like Raikou, had a huge part towards the end. And we really didn't build on her character. And we're not going to obviously build on her character because she's dead. So there was a lot there that I think they could have tweaked and maybe spent an episode or two kind of building towards those characters if this was a 10 episode run. But I think this is going to get a season 2. I don't think this is like October Faction where it's not going to get one. The dramatic dynamics were good. I thought that you could feel the emotion. You and I were texting about Josh Duhamel. His acting was amazing. Yeah. I didn't think he had it in him.
Now, this is probably the best thing I've ever seen him in.
Honestly, the best thing I saw him in before this was the Dorito Nacho Fries commercial. So, now, like, I didn't really put him up on, like, Win a Date with Tad Hamilton. You know what I mean? I didn't think Josh Duhamel was a legend.
Or the 8 Transformer movies that he was in.
Yeah, well, we're going to forget about those. I still don't think he's a legend, but I think he did good. He held his own in this and kind of carried it, in my opinion. And the final twist at the end was amazing. Yeah. I knew it was going to come because I read the comics and it happens really early in the comics. But the way that they painted it in a series was masterful. So let's kind of build with these characters a little bit. What did you think of the characters? Because like I have some thoughts on like two specific characters with Sheldon and Chloe. But I'd like to hear where you're at with some of these characters too.
Well, Sheldon, I like Sheldon, you know, aka the Utopian. I liked him. Even like his flashbacks into the like in the 20s and 30s where he was kind of this good old boy and he, you know, his dad ran a steel company. And the thing was, the one thing is he's very naive. And
yeah, for sure. He didn't think that his dad was a scumbag.
Yeah. And like, and Walter, Brainwave, was like, no, dad was kind of a piece of crap. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was our dad and I loved him, but I kept a lot from you because you put him on this pedestal. And Josh Jamal, like, no, he's not Captain America, but he kind of had that idealist of the good old boy, you know. Yeah, he was a millionaire in the 20s, but he was good to the employees and he was, you know, everything's peachy and sunshine and all this. And
yeah, you know who he reminded me of? And you kind of talked about Batman's code. He was Superman with Batman's code.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's the Boy Scout billionaire. So he's got all this money. Everybody's got money except for, you know, the workers. Everybody, the main characters, minus, I guess, Lady Liberty, had money, a ton of money. And dad kills himself. Then Sheldon, obviously suffering from PTSD because he saw that happen, starts to spiral out of control. Where you liked Sheldon, I didn't like Sheldon. I don't like him in the comics either. I think he's out of touch, and he didn't evolve with the times. He's very much Superman, where, you know, the adaption was hard, but he kept that Batman moral. Like, he lived through wars, he lived through genocide, and he lived through, you know, every internment camps and the Holocaust, and didn't bat an eye, didn't involve himself because he didn't want to be viewed as a political superhero. And I guess that is like a huge arc in certain comics that we don't really see. Like, you know, Justice League just goes out and does whatever, like no jurisdiction. They'll go to Russia in Justice League and they'll save everybody and because Steppenwolf's there. But besides that, they just intervene wherever they can. Where these guys, the Union of Justice, you know, very creative of the name, they're like, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to deal with bank robbers, you know, gunmen, stuff like that, superhuman villains, stuff like that. They're not going to touch anything political because they don't want to show an agenda. I like that creativeness of it, but the way that they paint Sheldon is he's an out of touch psychopath for most of the entire, like at least the past stuff. And then in the future stuff, they paint him as like this out of touch, you know, Gran Torino guy. Get off my lawn, kid.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I don't know. I did like him. And I think it was more of his performance that I liked and how he portrayed the character. But like, he was definitely out of, you know, and even like Paragon kind of said, like, dad, like you're, you know, it's not 80 years ago when the world was, you know, black and white. Like, it's there's gray areas now.
There were gray areas back then.
Yeah,
there was so much stuff that he overlooked. You know what I mean? Like, there was so much more. Like, compared to now, the past was pretty bad. Was in fact, it was bad. It was awful. You know what I mean? There were, most people didn't have rights. Lady Liberty wouldn't have rights in this. Most people were, you know, obviously I talked about the Holocaust and everything. You know, people were being heavily persecuted against. It's still happening now, but back then it was amplified because that was the news of the world. Like, the world hated each other. Not that it, you know, it's peace and love now, but it was bad. And Paragon adapted, obviously. I think that's where we're going to go in season two, where Walter kind of set this rift by thinking that George was this bad guy and turning George against everybody. And I think he's going to divide Paragon and Utopian and bring him in.
Oh, definitely. I definitely see that divide happen.
And they're going to say Martha at some scene. I know it. It's only fitting. But let's keep going. Chloe, is another character that I want to kind of talk about. Chloe in this series is a cokehead, sex addict, life spiraling, wants to be her own person, trying to find her own feet. Tragic story. Absolutely tragic story of a character that is the most powerful character in this universe, in this show. And they're just sending her into, like, she's a piece of ass for Hutch. She's a piece of ass for Nick of Time. And she's always on coke. She's always on the blue coke. She's really just going crazy and spiraling out of control. What do you think of Chloe?
I didn't like her.
I knew you weren't.
At all. Like, she just was... I mean, I get it. She's troubled and dealing with, you know, her dad and mom being superheroes. And, like, she kind of didn't want these superpowers. You know what I mean? Like, she just... She's a model and, you know, she wants to live her own life and she, but I don't know. There's nothing really redeemable about her to me.
Yeah.
Like she just, and then the scene where like, they were like, we want you lifting the car up and she lifts the car up and throws it at the person. That's the only time I liked her.
I feel like, and this is just kind of a trend that I'm seeing in the series, that if you're not Sheldon, Walt, or Brandon, your storyline isn't going anywhere. They're the four that the story was really centered around. The women are not written well in this. Lady Liberty is just kind of make the coffee, you know, go get the dry cleaning, stuff like that. There's a lot of weird tropes, old, out-of-touch tropes with the women characters in this, and that kind of bothers me. It's a little like that in the comics, too, but, you know, people write with the way that they write. What did you think of Hutch and his storyline? Because I honestly really liked Hutch and his storyline. I loved his stick, the communication stick. I loved that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I liked how he killed that gangster or whatever he was when they're at the restaurant.
Yeah, just sent it right through his heart.
Yeah.
That was cool. He killed the big man.
Yeah.
He's obviously finding his dad, Sky Fox, which is a great wrinkle in this series.
He's got one of the most unique powers because, like, obviously we talk about this with tropes and we talked about it with the Invincible, like, you know, Utopian.
Who has the great powers?
Hutch, like, with that stick. Like, I think that's original and awesome.
Yeah, I don't think he has powers, though. He's just a normal dude who has technology. He's Batman. Yeah, because, like, he encoded that stick with his codex, like, his words and his dialogue. And that it's kind of like Face ID on our phones. Like, if I did Face ID on my phone, you couldn't get into it. So he just encrypted it with his. You see, obviously, he's techie. But he's 100%. He's Batman. No, I don't think there's powers there.
But that thing he has, I think, is original. You know what I mean? Like, I've never seen
that. Oh, super dope. That was really dope.
But like I said, like, okay, he's not powerful. But, like, that shtick he has, and you know, his power is that. Like, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, he's dangerous. He made a teleportation stick. Like, who would have thought that? Like, the fact that, like, when he was so willingly to give it away to people, and he's like, yeah, you hold this, shark-infested waters. And he goes home, and it comes right back to him without the recipient.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it's super unique, but it's also, you don't need powers when you have that. But then we see when he's in the vault, and they lose the oxygen, he can't use it. He's kind of worthless. He's Chloe to save him.
Yeah, he was really cool.
Yeah, I liked him. I thought he was probably my favorite character of the series.
Really?
Yeah. Him and Blackstar, honestly.
Yeah, Blackstar was pretty cool.
Mainly because I didn't think Tyler Mane's voice was going to come out of that body. You know what I mean? Like, when that voice came out, I was like, oh, geez. You are a cartoon character. Who was your favorite character? Was it Matt Lanter, Anakin Skywalker, a.k.a. Sky Fox?
No, I kind of like Brainwave.
Yeah, Ben Daniels crushed it.
Yeah.
Like, he put power-wise awesome, but, like, performance, we talk about Josh Duhamel. Ben Daniels' performance was fantastic.
Yeah, because the whole thing, like, his whole life has been pretty much protecting Sheldon.
Yeah.
And
he really has.
You know, protecting, even before they had powers, was protecting Sheldon from his dad. And, you know, like I said, Sheldon had this idea of his dad, how he was this great man and great businessman, and, you know, a lot of the reason he didn't know he was a piece of crap is because of Walter.
Yep, Walter kind of blocked everything out like he does with his powers. Like, you know, he had powers before he had powers. Like, he had the power of deception. He had the power of deflection. You know, he was that guy who could get in your head and say, well, you know, don't worry about this. Let me handle Dad. We'll take care of this. Meanwhile, you know, Sheldon's running around. He's got a wife. He's in love with the newspaper reporter. He's in love with Lois Lane. And leaves his wife because he's like, you weren't in my dream.
Yeah.
You weren't in my dream. There's a weird doctor who nobody knows about and who really didn't show back up in the series. He's in my dream. You know, Fitz is in my dream. But baby, you're not in my dream. And he just outs. He's like, yeah, there's another girl in my dreams. I don't know if we got a future, but she's in my dreams. I thought that was super weird.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, he saw this vision. He saw this dream and that's what he needed to do. And
it worked out.
Yeah.
It certainly worked out.
I think it did.
They found the tree of life after fighting the trees of life and put their hand on a giant wall. And even though we don't know how it happened on the show, they got powers through Power Rangers Captain Planet vibes where they just touched it and their zodiac sign popped up on the wall. And it was like, all right, you are. It was Legends of the Hidden Temple. They just touched it. They got powers and they went on and they became flying superheroes. Here's my problem with the show. I think it was the pace of the show.
Yeah.
And you and I have talked about this, so I'm very looking forward to sharing our gripes. But the present story in my mind moved quickly, right? Mm-hmm. They focused on that. They streamlined that. We got that. The past story was 4 episodes too long. In my mind, I think they spent too much time building Sheldon, who comes off, like I said, unlikable, understanding he was losing his mind. But I didn't need 40 minutes of him and Red Foreman in a garage, in the cabin, and he's freaking out. Like, I didn't need that. Like, I understand why it was there, but that could have been like a cutscene. And I think they spent a lot of story and a lot of time exploring the rift between Sky Fox and Brainwave, only to trick the viewer at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big red herring, a big redirect. I think they could have spent more time really building Paragon, who is this, you know, future hero. He's the Robin of this universe, Superboy of this universe. They really didn't build him. They punished him, and that was it. So what did you think about the pace of the show?
Yeah, we talked about it off air. Like, it just, the conclusion of them getting their powers took forever. Yeah. And I
7 episodes.
I liked how they did it. Meaning,
so you liked the rock and the zodiac sign?
Okay, that was weird. But I liked how it was the quest, and he seen this vision. It was very Skull Island like. Hell, you know, they got the captain and the ship, and they're on the ship, and then they go to the island. Like, I thought that was cool. Mm-hmm. And then I liked how they, you know, were in this temple or wherever and saw the, you know, there was Vikings, and they weren't the only ones that came to that island. And I thought that was neat. I thought, okay.
That was great. That was a phenomenal scene. Let me ask you a question about that. Because you and I are like, we're storytellers, and we like to build shows and episodes after we've watched them. Would you have liked the journey, the expedition? Would you have liked that for the first 4 episodes and the final 4 episodes? Like, that 4th episode ends with them touching the rocks and the mountain, and then the next episode is the opening fight scene on the street, Paragon at the diner. He goes and fights that Shockwave, I believe. And then it goes right into, you know, the battle of Black Star. And then you carry on. And that way, you have the origins in the first half of the Volume 1. And then Volume 2, you get constant future. And then you can explore and peek. Would you have liked that a little bit better?
I think it would have made a little more sense. I think it would have...
We took 7 episodes jumping from decades to decades. It was... And, like, I don't need to see how many times Sheldon goes from the mill to Lois Lane's office. I don't need to see that.
Or spend 20 minutes with him in, what, Iowa changing a tire with that guy.
Yeah, like, why do I need to see every lug nut being turned or him dialing every single number to call Jane to go out there and get his ass kicked by two guys fighting over bread?
Yeah.
I didn't need those scenes. Only for that little girl to say, oh, you're talking about the farm. That little girl should have been in the back of that car. They changed the tires and was like, hey, there's the farm we're at.
I think it was Miller's farm, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was your farm.
It was my farm.
And, of course, took the long way, like you do in the podcast. Took the long way, the whole episode, to get to Miller's farm.
That's good. But, yeah, so, like I said, I like the scene where they got up to, like, the Vikings and see all that. And, like, I like that they were all trying to kill each other. And that's kind of what, you know, where the code came from. Is because that's how they got their powers, is because of the code. The super high-tech alien-like rock or whatever, like, that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
But I think the idea of the journey was good. The execution, I don't think, was as good. And I think kind of fell short for me.
Yeah. I think that, and sometimes the animation felt short for me, like the special effects. Some of it were a little cheesy, but understanding it doesn't have this Marvel DC budget. And we'll kind of compare it and contrast it to the stuff that we have out now. I want to talk about some things that we liked about the series, at least I liked. I want to know what you liked or what you didn't like. I didn't like, obviously, the pace, but I did like the costume designs. Mm-hmm. Loved the twist. I love the superhero Black Star battle. Was there something that, like, you definitively, at the end of this episode, that you hated? And is there something that you loved?
The one thing I didn't like at all was, okay, like you said, they opened up this door.
Yep. The Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah. Which is getting rebooted on CW.
Yep.
And
because they can't do any more DC shows because they're ruining them all.
So they open up this door and then, okay, they got their powers. Okay, I get that. Flash forward 90 years. You have tons and dozens and dozens and dozens of people that have powers. Yeah. And villains that have powers. How?
Yeah, no, zero explanation.
How did that happen? I get that the offspring of those six people have powers. I get that. But it's not like it's 600 years ago when, you know, there's, you know, 50 lines of lineage going here and there and everywhere. It's only, what, two generations, three generations?
Yeah.
So it's really just two generations. So how do all these, like, when Chloe's in that club and all her friends have powers.
And then Nick pops up. How did that?
And yeah, Nick has powers. And, you know, Brandon's best friend has powers. Like, how are all these people have powers?
Yep.
And even the villains, Black Star. What the hell is he? He's not a human.
Well, we got that explanation quickly. You have to have an eagle eye. In the first episode when they flashed the newspaper on the screen, he was a doctor who experimented on himself. That was it. Black Star. All you got, he's full of antimatter. But, like, he's your quasi-villain in this, right? And you don't get a story on him. You get him reading Twilight or, like, Fabio novels. And then he goes out. And, like, we spend more time fighting the clone of Black Star than we actually get with Black Star. And he comes in there and he's, like, he's snarky. He's great. We need it more of Black Star.
Yeah. But, like, that was my biggest gripe is, like, okay, we understand how these six got their powers. Well, sort of. We don't know what, like, the door opened and boom, there they go.
Yeah.
And the next thing we know, like, the door, big light showed up, and the next thing they know, they're floating over the ship like, hey, guys, we got powers now.
Yeah, like, I agree.
And then, like, with, like I said, you know, you have these, everyone else has these powers. How did that happen?
Yeah, that's the big thing. And I we'll jump to future in a minute for volume two. But I want to talk about how it stacks up with other comic series. And I watched this before you because, you know, you wait until, like, later to watch it, and that's fine. I had said that this is a healthy median to The Boys. And I excluded the Marvel stuff because I think Marvel is Marvel's world class, and all these other characters are playing catch up. But if we were to say it, I would put Marvel at the pinnacle, and at the bottom I would put CW. This is in the middle. So I think it's better than every CW series that is out right now. Every single one of them. I think it falls short of the Umbrella Academy. It's better than the October Faction.
My shit is better than the October Faction.
Correct. And it falls well short of The Boys.
I agree. Like, when you said it, I was like, that is perfect. Like, it is... It's middle of the road.
Yeah.
It's not bad, but it's not fantastic.
Yeah, so let me ask you a question about that, and then I'll let you finish. This has a new comic coming out in June or July. Did this series do enough for you to pick up that comic and be excited about it?
Maybe.
Okay. It's a resounding in the middle. Kind of like our rating of this.
Yeah. But like I said, like, it was good enough for me to go, I think this has promise, and I think this can get better.
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a season two there.
Yeah, and I'm excited for it. Like, it's not like one of those where I'm like, yeah. Like, I enjoyed it. There was a lot of things I didn't like, but I did like it. Like, there was a lot of things I liked. Like I said, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen, but it wasn't fantastic. So, but I think it has a lot of promise. I think if they work out some of the kinks, I think the show could be really good.
Yeah, and I think my big thing is it being so middle ground, this is the launching off point of the Miller world and the Millerverse, right? This is the very first, I think we got Sharky the Bounty Hunter, more Kingsman stuff, more Kick-Ass, where some of the costumes were very reminiscent of Kick-Ass costumes, especially like Ryko, who had like that clunky PVC kind of Kevlar Kick-Ass kind of red mist suit, which Mark Miller has a type. I think this is a good learning period or good learning moment for the Miller world to say, all right, we might need to ramp up a little bit more and we might need to cut stuff because he's got Prodigy coming out. He's got like 45 properties coming out. We kind of talked about this a while ago, and this was the first one. It's a good start, but it can be great. So season two needs to be great for me to feel 100% confident in investing so much time into Miller world. If we're looking at Netflix comic book series, I actually think Warrior Nun was better than this.
I don't know. I really liked Warrior Nun. I think at the end of the day,
I think I liked it because it was different. And this was kind of, it's Capes and Cows. You know what I mean?
No.
I've seen a lot of Capes and Cows, and so is you.
Yeah, but I really liked Warrior Nun. I think this was, to me, I think it was more of a fun watch. Like, Warrior Nun was good, but I think I enjoyed this a little more.
Okay, well, that's fair. I mean, we both have our types. It goes based off of our comics. You know, you are Capes and Cows. I kind of dive into the outer worlds a little bit. So let's kind of go to volume two. Mark Miller doesn't like seasons. This is volume two. And again, Stephen S. DeKnight, another good series under his belt. So, you know, Millville's Own, shout out to him. What would you like to see in volume two of Jupiter's Legacy?
The biggest thing was my biggest gripe. I want to see how those people got their powers.
Same.
I want to see, like I said, like, to me, that just baffled me. Like, they, no explanation, no, like, if it was just the six and their offspring, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Like, but it's not.
I wrote the same thing, dude. I wrote an explanation of powers, and my reason for it is they seem to believe that the viewers are all readers of the comic books and that you're supposed to know going into this how they got their powers. And I think
they explain it in the comics?
They do a little bit, but I think that that's kind of arrogant on the, you know, the series itself to say you want to know about these powers. And of course it's a glaring question. You want to know how the rest of the people got them. You have to wait till volume two. I think that's kind of a bold, cocky, and confident statement. And Netflix usually, you know, Netflix comes out and pretty quick and says we're going to renew these. This hasn't been renewed yet. So I'm curious to see where this is going to go. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
So that's probably my biggest thing that I want to see.
Okay.
I want to see really, you know, I want to see more of Brainwave's betrayal.
For sure.
I want to see where that leads to. And like you kind of said with, you know, he's kind of maybe take Paragon and, you know, put a rift between him and Utopian. Even a bigger rift than there already is.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that.
So that would be really cool to see. I kind of would like to see Chloe's redemption, maybe.
Yeah. You don't want to see her on her back in 95% of her episodes?
Yeah.
I mean, that's true, you know, right?
Because the woman that played her was good.
She doesn't even look like Chloe. Like, a whole different design. Like, I looked at her IMDb picture, and it's Elena Campouros.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, yeah. She looks like she's a 14-year-old girl, number one. And I'm like, how is this happening? Why? I felt dirty watching it. I was like, this is a child. And, turn this off.
And she's...
She's a grown woman.
Now she's like in her mid-20s.
She's 10 years younger than I am, so she's 24.
Yeah. And then, you know, she's blonde. Yeah, I agree. She'd look
completely different.
But I think the actress that played her was good.
Great.
Yeah. I just think the character was shit.
And that's kind of how she's written. I told you, man. There's tropes. There's some stereotypes in these comics.
So I kind of would like to see a redemption of her.
Yeah, me too. I stuck with three bullet points. One we kind of talked about. Less past stories for me. Get out of the past. Work towards the future. We know what's going to happen. More character building for the young heroes. We already saw how the Union of Justice got their powers. We already saw the 18 episodes of that journey. We know their powers. We know who they are. Maybe not all of them because, you know, I think Fitz got the short end of the stick. Obviously...
Oh. 100%.
And like super smart. Like, we didn't get a lot of him. We didn't get a lot of Dr. Richard Conrad, who was Blue Bolt. We didn't get a lot of him. I want more exploration on Hutch. I want more exploration on that group. I don't care about Nick of Time. Thought that was a cool little name. But I want to see more exploration into these young heroes. And the big thing, the huge thing, besides Sky Fox coming back, I need to see that in season two. Because I think... our boy Matt Lanter, who is the voice of Anakin Skywalker in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
I think he was phenomenal.
He was.
He was great at
it. He made you want to hate him.
Yeah, you know, I didn't really hate him. I hated Walt more than I hated George, because I think George is just a dickhead. And that, you know, he's an arrogant dickhead who had money. I didn't get, like, I knew he would turn. You know what I mean? And it just kind of, because it just, that's who he is. And I think Walt was just like, Walt's a snake. You know, he lies to his family, he hides things from his family, and he compartmentalizes things. And I was like, Walt, you're a scumbag. And then he showed that he was a scumbag, and he's trying to recruit his nephew to kill his brother. But the big thing, besides George, is we need more villains.
Yeah.
We've got inner struggles with everybody on the whole Union of Justice. We've got Sky Fox in limbo. And we've got Black Star. And that one little throwaway villain we got in the first episode, opening scene. I think we need more villains. Little villains. Minor villains. Not Hutch's gang. Because they really do anything.
No.
I want more minor villains with powers. Not thugs, not gangs, not organizations. Powers. That's what I want.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's it, man. Jupiter's Legacy, in the books. We'll be back for season two. Because that's exactly what we do. Next week, we're going to come back with a little dive in the MODOK. Well, it's coming out on Hulu. Let's give it a little discussion and see where we stand with it. But we'll be back next week. Watch MODOK, available on Hulu. We'll talk about it. We'll gush about Patton Oswalt and where MODOK fits in the MCU. And follow us on social media, the Active Geek Podcast, wherever you're on social media. Subscribe to the podcast and all podcast directories. Chuck and AG Cosplay are on Instagram. You can find them through our Instagram, The Active Geek. Listen to Galaxy Wars every Monday. We just did Nobody. And we'll be back next week for the Active Geek Podcast. I am Jim.
I am Chuck.
And we are out.